Talking refugees, if you'd like to join in the discussion this morning, the question is, how much of an issue do you think it is for the global community? Do you have any first-hand experience you feel comfortable to share with us on the program, or views that you would like to contribute on the discussion of refugees and asylum seekers? Of course, it's becoming huge. There's a bit of stuff about Italy and Libya coming out at the moment about the current situation in MENA. I'm very sure that we're going to see quite a fallout from the current situations across MENA, particularly Libya, Tunisia and Egypt, with many people seeking safe and stable haven from their current situations in their own countries. This raises the question of assimilation. It is a key concern for governments and also for each and every one of us in terms of how we associate and how we respond to change, particularly when it's coming from different cultures. So let's have a chat about the actual refugees and asylum seekers themselves and the issue of post-traumatic stress disorder. Many of these people are coming from horrific situations that so many others would have absolutely no idea, and they're very blessed to not have any idea about that horrific background. Dr. Raymond, let's talk about post-traumatic stress disorder.
Post-traumatic stress disorder is a continuation of acute stress disorder, and it constitutes going through features of depression, anxiety, hypervigilance, exaggerated startle response, intrusive thoughts. And it can have many other dimensions, as mentioned earlier in today's show, dissociative amnesia, depending on the severity of it. Sometimes post-traumatic stress disorder can be so severe, it actually resembles a psychotic episode. And sometimes people have actually had short-term psychotic episodes in which they have needed to be hospitalized and medicated because it become so severe.
Completely.
Now, not everybody goes through that. Let's look at the difference between fear and anxiety. Fear is when there's actually something there that is frightening.
Real.
Anxiety is when that something is not there, but you still have the same symptoms. Well, the reason that's constituted as part of stress, along with depression, is because once you've had a traumatic experience that compromises your sense of human integrity, which means it's an unusual human event. At least that's the way it's written in the DSM-4TR, which is the diagnostic manual now. That's going to change a little bit by 2013 when the DSM-5 comes out, by the way. There's going to be an element that says when you've had such a trauma, it doesn't just go away because the trauma goes away. There's always that fear that it could recur. Now, if those of you who are first-year psychology students will remember classical conditioning by Ivan Pavlov that says that we match a scary situation with a person, a place, or a situation, and that only has to happen once for you to, next time you see that person or in that situation or at that place, can still have the same reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Until you've had enough experiences at that place with that person in that situation,
Doctor,
where there is nothing negative, to become deconditioned from it.
Can I just share an SMS that's come through from one of our listeners directly related to exactly what you're talking about now? My husband is from India, occupied Kashmir. He still jumps at the slightest sound. It reminds him of bullets.
This is very typical with PTSD. Now, PTSD means that these symptoms have gone on past 4 weeks after the traumatic event. In the first 4 weeks of the traumatic event, it's called ASD, acute stress disorder. If the same symptoms persist of depression, anxiety, hypervigilance, exaggerated startle response, intrusive thoughts, even dissociative amnesia in some cases, then it's called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. We can even see it on the brain now. So when people experience this, it's this, there's certain activities in the brain that are recognized as features of PTSD symptoms. Now, that yet is not conclusive, but it will be pretty soon. So what we see then is that what is being described, that every time a door slams or somebody clicks on a loud switch of a light, the person might think it's a bullet. That's called an exaggerated startle response. We see this a lot from people who come from war-torn countries where bombs went off. Somebody could accidentally shut the door louder than usual, and you'll see several people jumping on the floor.
How is this healed? How do we get to, I mean, are people in the SMS, thank you very much for sending that through about your husband, but in this specific case of our listener who sent through how her husband's from India, occupied Kashmir, still jumps at the slightest sounds, reminds him of bullets, how long has this been going on for, and is it possible to heal from something like this?
Yes, actually it is. Adults, according to the statistics, and children's statistics are actually more impressive, but adults will heal. Usually there's about 67% chance of healing on their own if it's mild PTSD. So in other words, the more experience they have that those loud noises aren't traumatic, that those loud noises are not really bullets, they'll begin to dissociate from that fear. In other words, they'll get deconditioned from hearing those sounds that remind them of the bullets. There are cases, however, of that remaining 33% in adults that requires some kind of psychological intervention. The psychological intervention involves various kinds of techniques. It can be deconditioning techniques like systematic deconditioning. It could be eye movement techniques. There's various kinds of techniques that are being used. Sometimes people will try to dabble in hypnosis and things like that. And even though I studied hypnosis under some of the best hypnotherapists in the country, it is not a cure. It is only a vehicle to help expedite the curing process. It is important to go back to the source of the problem. It is never good to ignore it and just change symptoms. So this is why the psychological interventions are very important. Yes, it takes a little bit longer, and yes, it may be a little bit more emotional to deal with, but it has a much longer permanent effect of resolution.
Aisha has sent through an SMS. Very good morning to you, Aisha. Generally, I find boundaries and borders one of the most cruel inventions, as it limits a human being where to live or even travel. The entire world should be our right to live on at our own choice. This would have resulted into no immigrants, refugees, discrimination, etc. Imagine this ideal situation. You know, Aisha, I think there's a lot of people who think along the same lines as you. I've had discussions with people in the past who have suggested that within 100 years' time, no one's ever even going to be using passports. Different views, different viewpoints. And, of course, I just shared a message that was coming through on Facebook when I posed this question. From Tom Gara, he commented on this, and he was just saying that he believes in migration and thinks that we should be accepting of huge numbers of migrants. Migrants are good for development, and it's the morally good thing to do. But if you believe in migration as a good thing, you need to believe in a system around it. It can't just be first prize to whoever can make it here first. I think that those days are long gone. So there does need to be a collaborative approach from governments worldwide. There also needs to be open and transparent dialogue between the people within the country, the existing people, the people who have been born there, accepting other people in, to deal with these issues of assimilation. On this morning's program, the question is, how much of an issue do you believe it is for the global community? And do you have any first-hand experience and you feel comfortable to share with us?